Chapter 13. How Not to Die from Prostate Cancer. When Tony, a regular reader of NutritionFacts.org, heard that I was writing this book, he asked me to share his story with you in hopes of helping other men avoid what happened to him. A happily married father, engineer, and self-described fitness nut, he always tried to make good choices out of respect for his body and was lucky to have descended from long-lived, healthy ancestors. Tony was a runner who had always been at a healthy weight. He stayed away from tobacco, alcohol, and drugs. In the 1980s, based on health recommendations from the USDA, he convinced his family to switch from whole milk to skim milk and from beef to fish and chicken, lots and lots of chicken. Tony was the kind of patient doctors love to take care of, the type who says, "What else can I do to be at my very best?" So no one was more surprised than Tony when, in his early 50s, he was diagnosed with an aggressive prostate cancer. He sought care at a world-renowned medical center and underwent a radical prostatectomy, which successfully removed his cancer but left him with the daily challenge of dealing with the consequences of that surgery, namely urinary leakage and erectile dysfunction. He says he wishes he had known about the conflicts of interest within the USDA, which I talked about in Chapter 5, that have affected the federal agency's ability to make recommendations in the best interest of the public, independent of those of the food industry. Eventually, Tony discovered the body of research you'll be hearing about in this chapter, and being a scientist, he immediately understood the evidence that a healthy diet can improve male health. He has eaten a plant-based diet for the last several years, takes flaxseed every day, and has had no recurrence of cancer. As I'll discuss, the same diet that may prevent prostate cancer has also been shown to potentially slow it down and even reverse its progression among those already diagnosed. So it is Tony's and my wish that this chapter will help you see the importance of healthy eating for a healthy prostate. The prostate is a walnut-sized gland located between the bladder and the base of the penis, just in front of the rectum. It surrounds the urethra, the outlet from the bladder, and secretes the fluid portion of semen. Just as glandular tissue in the breast can become cancerous, so can glandular tissue in the prostate. Autopsy studies have shown that about half of men over the age of 80 have prostate cancer. Most men die with prostate cancer without ever knowing they had it. That's the problem with the emphasis on screenings. Many prostate cancers that are detected may never have led to harm, even if they'd gone undiscovered. Unfortunately, not all men are so lucky. Nearly 28,000 American men die each year from prostate cancer. Milk and prostate cancer. Since the U.S. National Dairy Board was first created by the Dairy and Tobacco Adjustment Act of 1983, it has spent more than $1 billion on advertising. By now, we're all familiar with its various slogans, such as, "Milk is a natural." But is it? Think about it. Humans are the only species who drink milk after weaning. It also seems a bit unnatural to drink the milk of another species. What about milk, it does a body good? All foods of animal origin contain sex steroid hormones such as estrogen, but today's genetically improved dairy cows are milked throughout their pregnancies when their reproductive hormones are particularly high. These hormones, naturally found even in organic cow's milk, may play a role in the various associations identified between milk and other dairy products and hormone-related conditions, including acne, diminished male reproductive potential, and premature puberty. The hormone content in milk may explain why women who drink it appear to have 5 times the rate of twin births compared to women who do not drink milk. When it comes to cancer, though, the greatest concern may have to do with the growth hormones. Mother Nature designed cow's milk to put a few hundred pounds on a baby calf within a few months. A lifetime of human exposure to these growth factors in milk may help explain the connections found between dairy consumption and certain cancers. Leading Harvard University nutrition experts have expressed concern that the hormones in dairy products and other growth factors could stimulate the growth of hormone-sensitive tumors. Experimental evidence suggests that dairy could also promote the conversion of precancerous lesions or mutated cells into invasive cancers. Concerns about milk and other dairy products first arose from population-scale data, such as the 25-fold increase in prostate cancer in Japanese men since World War II, which coincided with a 7-fold increase in egg consumption, a 9-fold increase in meat consumption, and a 20-fold increase in dairy consumption. Though the rest of their diets remain comparatively stable, and similar trends have been noted in other countries, there are myriad changes in Japanese society beyond eating more animal products that could have contributed to these rising cancer rates. So scientists took a closer look. To control for as many variables as possible, researchers devised an experiment in which they dripped milk on human prostate cancer cells in a petri dish. The researchers chose organic cow's milk to exclude any effect of the added hormones, such as bovine growth hormone, which is commonly injected into conventionally raised cows so they produce more milk. The researchers found that cow's milk stimulated the growth of human prostate cancer cells in each of 14 separate experiments, producing an average increase in cancer growth rate of more than 30%. In contrast, almond milk suppressed the growth of the cancer cells by more than 30%. What happens in a petri dish, though, doesn't necessarily happen in people. Nevertheless, a compilation of case-control studies did conclude that cow's milk consumption is a risk factor for prostate cancer, and the same outcome was found for cohort studies. A 2015 meta-analysis found that high intakes of dairy products, milk, low-fat milk, and cheese, but not non-dairy sources of calcium, appear to increase total prostate cancer risk. But, you may be wondering, if you don't drink milk, what will happen to your bones? Doesn't milk help prevent osteoporosis? It turns out the promised benefit may be just another empty marketing ploy. A meta-analysis of cow's milk intake and hip fracture studies shows no significant protection. Even if you were to start drinking milk during adolescence in an attempt to bolster peak bone mass, it probably won't reduce your chances of fracture later in life. One recent set of studies involving 100,000 men and women followed for up to 2 decades even suggested milk may increase bone and hip fracture rates. Some babies are born with a rare birth defect called galactosemia, in which they lack the enzymes needed to detoxify galactose, a type of sugar found in milk. This means they end up with elevated levels of galactose in their blood, which can cause bone loss. A group of Swedish researchers figured that even among normal people who can detoxify the stuff, it might not be such a good idea for their bones to be drinking all that galactose in milk every day. And galactose may not just hurt bones. Scientists actually use galactose to induce premature aging in lab animals. When researchers slip lab animals some galactose, the, quote, life-shortened animals show neurodegeneration, mental retardation, and cognitive dysfunction, diminished immune responses, and reduction in reproductive ability, unquote. And it doesn't take much, just the human equivalent of 1 to 2 glasses worth of milk a day. However, since humans aren't rodents, researchers investigated the connection between milk intake and mortality, as well as fracture risk in large populations of milk drinkers. In addition to significantly more bone and hip fractures, researchers found higher rates of premature death, more heart disease, and significantly more cancer for each daily glass of milk women drank. 3 glasses of milk a day was associated with nearly twice the risk of dying early. Men with higher milk consumption also had a higher rate of death, although they did not seem to have higher fracture rates. Overall, the study showed a dose-dependent higher rate of mortality, both men and women, and fracture in women. But the opposite was found for other dairy products, such as soured milk and yogurt, which would go along with the galactose theory, because the bacteria in these foods can ferment away some of the lactose. The medical journal editorial accompanying the published study emphasized that, given the rise in milk consumption around the world, the role of milk in mortality needs to be established definitively now. Eggs, choline, and cancer. More than 2 million men are currently living with prostate cancer, but living with prostate cancer is better than dying from it. If the cancer is caught while still localized within the prostate, the chances of it killing you within the next 5 years are practically nil. However, if the cancer spreads far enough, your chances of surviving 5 years may be as low as 1 in 3. For this reason, scientists have been desperate to identify factors involved in the spread of prostate cancer once it's emerged. Hoping to identify possible culprits, Harvard University researchers recruited more than 1,000 men with early-stage prostate cancer and followed them for several years. Compared with men who rarely ate eggs, men who ate even less than a single egg a day appeared to have twice the risk of prostate cancer progression, such as metastasizing into the bones. The only thing potentially worse for prostate cancer than eggs was poultry. Men with more aggressive prostate cancer who regularly ate chicken and turkey had up to 4 times the risk of prostate cancer progression. The researchers suggested that the link between consuming poultry and advancing cancer may be due to the cooked meat carcinogens, such as the heterocyclic amines I've already discussed. For unknown reasons, these carcinogens build up more in the muscles of chickens and turkeys than in those of other animals. But what cancer-promoting substance is there in eggs? How could eating less than an egg a day double the risk of cancer invasion? The answer may be choline, a compound found concentrated in eggs. Higher levels of choline in the blood have been associated with increased risk of developing prostate cancer in the first place. This may explain the link between eggs and cancer progression. But what about cancer mortality? In a paper entitled "Choline Intake and Risk of Lethal Prostate Cancer," the same Harvard team found that men who consumed the most choline from food also had an increased risk of cancer death. Men who consume 2.5 or more eggs per week, basically an egg every 3 days, may have an 81% increased risk of dying from prostate cancer. The choline in eggs, like the carnitine in red meat, is converted into a toxin called trimethylamine by bacteria that exists in the guts of those who eat meat. And trimethylamine, once oxidized in the liver, appears to increase the risk of heart attack, stroke, and premature death in general. Ironically, the presence of choline in eggs is something the egg industry boasts about, even though most Americans get more than enough choline. Mind you, the industry executives are aware of the cancer connection. Through the Freedom of Information Act, I was able to get my hands on an email from the executive director of the Egg Nutrition Board, directed to another egg industry executive, that discussed the Harvard study, suggesting that choline is a culprit in promoting cancer progression. "Certainly worth keeping in mind," he wrote, quote, "as we continue to promote choline as another good reason to consume eggs," unquote. Diet versus exercise. Nathan Pritikin, the man who helped launch a lifestyle medicine revolution, saved my grandma's life, wasn't a nutritionist or a dietitian. He wasn't even a doctor. He was an engineer. When he was diagnosed with heart disease in his 40s, Pritikin reviewed all the available research himself and decided to try eating the type of diet followed by populations in places like rural Africa where heart disease was rare. He figured that if he stopped eating a heart disease-promoting diet, he could stop the advancement of the disease. What he found was even more remarkable. He didn't just stop the disease from getting worse, he reversed his condition. He then went on to help thousands of others do the same. After vanquishing our number one killer, heart disease, Dr. Dean Ornish and Pritikin Research Foundation researchers moved on to killer number two, cancer. They developed an elegant series of experiments, placing people on different diets and then dripping their blood on human cancer cells growing in a petri dish. Whose bloodstream would be better at suppressing cancer growth? Researchers showed that the blood of people randomized to a plant-based diet group was dramatically less hospitable to cancer cell growth than the blood of people in the control group who continued to eat their typical diet. The blood of those eating the standard American diet does fight cancer. If it didn't, many of us would be dead, but the blood of people eating plant-based diets was shown to fight cancer about 8 times better. The blood of men on the standard American diet slowed down the rate of prostate cancer cell growth by 9%. Place men on a plant-based diet for a year, though, and the blood circulating within their bodies can suppress cancer cell growth by 70%. That's nearly 8 times the stopping power compared to a meat-centered menu. Similar studies have shown that women eating plant-based diets appear to strengthen their body's defenses against breast cancer in just 14 days, as I detailed earlier. It's as if we're a totally different person inside after eating and living healthfully just for a couple weeks. It should be noted that the strengthening of cancer defenses in all these studies involved eating a plant-based diet and exercising. For example, in the breast cancer study, the women were asked to walk 30 to 60 minutes a day. How, then, do we know it was the diet that made their blood more effective at suppressing cancer growth? To tease out the effects of diet and exercise, a UCLA research team compared three groups of men, a plant-based diet and exercise group, an exercise-only group, and a control group of sedentary people eating standard fare. The diet and exercise group had been following a plant-based diet for 14 years, along with participating in moderate exercise, such as a daily walk. The exercise-only group, eating the standard American diet, on the other hand, had spent about 15 years exercising strenuously for an hour a day at the gym at least 5 times a week. The researchers wanted to know if people who exercise hard enough for long enough develop cancer-fighting abilities that rival that of strolling plant eaters. To find out, blood from each of the three groups was dripped on human prostate cancer cells growing in a petri dish to see whose blood kicked more cancer butt. The blood of the control group wasn't completely defenseless. Even if you're a French fry-eating couch potato, your blood may still be able to kill off 1-2% of cancer cells. But the blood of those who exercise strenuously every weekday for 15 years killed 2,000% more cancer cells than the control groups. Fantastic results, but the blood of those in the plant-based diet and exercise group wiped out an astounding 4,000% more cancer cells than that of the first group. Clearly, exercise alone had a dramatic effect, but at the end of the day, thousands of hours in the gym appeared to be no match for a plant-based diet. Prostate cancer reversal through diet? If a healthy diet can turn your bloodstream into a cancer-fighting machine, what about using it not just to prevent cancer, but also to treat it? Other leading killers, including heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and hypertension, can be prevented, arrested, and even reversed, so why not cancer? To test this question, Dr. Ornish and his colleagues recruited 93 men with prostate cancer who had chosen not to undergo any conventional treatment. Prostate cancer can be so slow-growing and the side effects of treatment so onerous that men diagnosed with it often choose to be placed in a medical holding pattern called watchful waiting or expectant management. Because the next step is often chemotherapy, radiation, and/or radical surgery that may leave men incontinent and impotent, doctors try to delay treatment as long as possible. And since these patients aren't actively doing anything to treat the disease, they represent an ideal population in whom to investigate the power of diet and lifestyle interventions. The prostate cancer patients were randomized into two groups, a control group that wasn't given any diet or lifestyle advice beyond whatever their personal doctors told them to do, and a healthy living group, prescribed a strict plant-based diet centered on fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and beans, along with other healthy lifestyle changes, such as walking for 30 minutes 6 days a week. Cancer progression was tracked using PSA levels, a marker of prostate cancer growth inside the body. After a year, the control group's PSA levels increased by 6%. That's what cancer tends to do, grow over time. But among the healthy living group, PSA levels decreased by 4%, suggesting an average shrinkage of their tumors. No surgery, no chemotherapy, no radiation, just eating and living healthfully. Biopsies taken before and after the diet and lifestyle intervention showed that the expression of more than 500 genes was affected. This is one of the first demonstrations that changing what you eat and how you live can affect you at a genetic level in terms of which genes are switched on and which genes are switched off. Within a year after the study ended, the cancers in the patients in the control group grew so much that 10% of them were forced to undergo a radical prostatectomy, a surgery that involves the removal of the entire prostate gland and surrounding tissues. This treatment can lead not only to urinary incontinence, urine leakage, and impotence, but to alterations in orgasmic function, approximately 80% of men undergoing the procedure. In contrast, none in the plant-based diet and lifestyle group ended up on the operating table. How were the researchers able to convince a group of older men to basically eat a vegan diet for a year? They evidently delivered prepared meals to their homes. I guess the researchers figured men are so lazy they'll just eat whatever's put in front of them, and it worked. Now, how about in the real world? realizing that doctors apparently can't get most men with cancer to even eat a measly 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, a group of researchers at the University of Massachusetts settled on just trying to change their A to V ratio, or the ratio of animal to vegetable proteins in their diets. Maybe just a reduction in meat and dairy and an increase in plant foods would be enough to put the cancer in remission. To test this, the researchers randomized prostate cancer patients into 2 groups. One group that attended classes on eating a more plant-based diet, and a conventional care group that received no dietary instruction. The healthy eating advice group was able to drop their A to V ratio down to about 1-to-1, getting half of their protein from plant sources. In contrast, the control group's ratio stayed up at about 3-to-1 animal to plant protein. Those on the half-vegan diet did appear to slow down the growth of their cancer. Their average PSA doubling time, an estimate of how fast their tumors may have been doubling in size, slowed from 21 months to 58 months. In other words, the cancer kept growing, but even a part-time plant-based diet appeared to be able to significantly slow down their tumor's expansion. It's worth noting, though, that Dr. Ornish and colleagues were able to demonstrate that a full-time plant-based diet allowed for an apparent reversal in cancer growth. The subjects' PSA levels didn't just rise more slowly, they trended downward. Thus, the ideal animal-plant ratio may be closer to 0-to-1. A side note on the worst A and the best V. What if there's just no way Grandpa's going vegan, leaving you with only half measures? What would be on the short list of foods for him to avoid and to include in his diet? Based on the Harvard University prostate cancer progression and mortality data detailed before, eggs and poultry may be the worst offenders. Patients may face twice the cancer progression risk from eating less than a single egg per day, and up to quadruple the risk for eating less than a single serving of chicken or turkey daily. On the other hand, if you were to add only one thing to your diet, consider cruciferous vegetables. Less than a single serving a day of broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower, kale may cut the risk of cancer progression by more than half. Watching your animal-to-plant protein ratio might be useful for cancer prevention in general. For example, the largest study ever performed on diet and bladder cancer, comprising nearly 500,000 people, found that an increase in animal protein consumption of just 3% was associated with a 15% increased risk of bladder cancer. On the other hand, an increase in plant protein intake of only 2% was associated with a 23% decreased cancer risk. Flaxseed. Prostate cancer rates vary tremendously around the world. African Americans, for example, may have an incidence of clinically apparent prostate cancer that is 30 times greater than that of Japanese men and 120 times greater than that of Chinese men. This discrepancy has been attributed in part to the higher amounts of animal protein and fat in Western diets. Another factor, though, may be the soy, common in many Asian diets, which contains protective phytoestrogens called isoflavones. As I detailed earlier, the other major class of phytoestrogens is lignans, found throughout the plant kingdom, but especially concentrated in flax seeds. Higher levels of lignans tend to be found in the prostate fluids of populations of men with relatively low rates of prostate cancer, and lignans have also been shown to slow the growth of prostate cancer cells in a petri dish. Researchers decided to put lignans to the test by asking men with prostate cancer scheduled for prostate removal surgery the following month to consume 3 tablespoons a day of flaxseed. After surgery, their tumors were examined. Within just those few weeks, the flaxseed consumption appeared to have lowered their cancer cell proliferation rates, while at the same time increasing the rate of cancer cell clearance. Even better, flaxseeds may also be able to prevent prostate cancer from advancing to that stage in the first place. Prostatic intraepithelial neoplasia, known as PIN, P-I-N, is a precancerous prostate lesion found during a biopsy. It's analogous to ductal carcinoma in situ of the breast. Those with PIN have a high risk for cancer to appear during subsequent biopsies, 25-79%. Because men are repeatedly biopsied to monitor their condition, the procedures provide a perfect opportunity to see if dietary intervention can help those lesions from progressing to cancer. After the first biopsies of their prostates came back PIN positive, 15 men were asked to eat 3 tablespoons of flax seeds a day for 6 months until their next biopsy. After that time, they showed a significant drop in PSA levels and biopsy cell proliferation rates, suggesting that flax seeds may indeed thwart the progression of prostate cancer. 2 of the men saw their PSA levels drop to normal and didn't even need a second biopsy. Bottom line, the evidence suggests that flaxseed is a safe, low-cost source of nutrition and may reduce tumor proliferation rates. Why not give it a try? Just make sure to grind the flaxseeds first if you don't buy them pre-ground, otherwise the seeds might pass right through your body undigested. Enlarged prostate. If a healthy diet can slow down the abnormal growth of prostate cancer cells, can it also slow down the abnormal growth of normal prostate cells? Benign prostatic hyperplasia, BPH, is a condition characterized by enlargement of the prostate gland. In the United States, BPH affects millions of men, as many as half of men by their 50s, and 80% of men by their 80s. Because the male prostate surrounds the outlet from the bladder, it can obstruct the normal flow of urine if it grows too large. This obstruction can cause a weak or hesitant urine stream and inadequate emptying of the bladder, requiring frequent trips to the bathroom. The stagnant urine retained in the bladder can also become a breeding ground for infection. Unfortunately, the problem only seems to get worse as the gland continues to grow. Billions of dollars have been spent on drugs and supplements, and millions of Americans have undergone surgery for BPH. Surgical procedures involve a variety of Roto-Rooter techniques with innocent-sounding acronyms such as TUMPT, TUNA, and TURP. The T's stand for transurethral, meaning going up through the penis with an instrument called a resectoscope. TUMPT, T-U-M-T, stands for transurethral microwave thermotherapy, in which doctors basically tunnel up the penis using an antenna-like tool and burn out a shaft with microwaves. TUNA stands for transurethral needle ablation. Here, a column is burned out with a pair of heated needles. And these are so-called minimally invasive techniques. The gold standard procedure is a TURP, wherein surgeons essentially use a loop of wire to core out the prostate. Side effects include post-operative discomfort. You think? There has to be a better way. BPH is so common that most doctors may assume that it's just an inevitable consequence of aging. But it wasn't always so. In China in the 1920s and 30s, for example, a medical college in Beijing reported that BPH affected not 80% of male patients, but about 80 cases total over 15 years. Both the historic rarity of BPH and prostate cancer in Japan and China have been attributed to the country's traditional plant-based diets. This idea was studied by the same Pritikin Foundation researchers who pitted the blood of individuals before and after a plant-based diet against the growth of prostate cancer cells. This time, they performed the same experiment on the type of normal prostate cells that grow to obstruct urine flow. Within just 2 weeks, those eating plant-based diets saw their blood acquire the ability to suppress the abnormal growth of non-cancerous prostate cells too, and the effect didn't seem to dissipate with time. The blood of those eating plant-based diets over the long term had the same beneficial effect for up to 28 years straight. So it appears as long as we continue to eat healthfully, prostate cell growth rates will continue to go down and stay down. Some plants may be particularly prostate-friendly. Researchers found that flax seeds can be used to treat BPH. Men given the equivalent of about 3 tablespoons of flax seeds a day experienced relief comparable to that provided by commonly prescribed drugs such as Flomax or Proscar, without the drugs' side effects, such as lightheadedness or sexual dysfunction. Is it possible to prevent BPH in the first place? Eating garlic and onions has been associated with a significantly lower risk of BPH. In general, cooked vegetables may work better than raw ones, and legumes, beans, chickpeas, split peas, and lentils, have also been associated with lower risk. TVP, short for textured vegetable protein, is a soybean product often used in pasta sauces and veggie chili. I would recommend that type of TVP over the one used in urology, which stands for transurethral vaporization of the prostate. IGF-1. why do people who live to 100 or older seem to escape cancer? As you age, your risk of developing and dying from cancer grows every year until you hit 85 or 90, when, interestingly, your cancer risk begins to drop. Indeed, if you don't get cancer by a certain age, you may never get it. What accounts for this relative resistance to cancer among centenarians? It may have to do with a cancer-promoting growth hormone called insulin-like growth factor 1, IGF-1. Each year, you are reborn. You create and destroy nearly your entire body weight in new cells every year. Every day, about 50 billion of your cells die, and about 50 billion new cells are born to keep you in balance. Of course, sometimes you need to grow, as when you're a baby or during puberty. Your cells don't become larger when you grow up, they simply become more numerous. An adult may have around 40 trillion cells in his or her body, 4 times more than a child. Once you've gotten through puberty, you no longer need to produce many more cells than you retire. You still need your cells to grow and divide, of course, out with the old and with the new. You just don't want to make more cells than you're putting out to pasture. In adults, extra cell growth may mean the development of tumors. How does your body keep itself in balance? By sending chemical signals called hormones to all the cells. A key signal is a growth hormone called IGF-1. Sounds like a droid from Star Wars, but IGF-1 is actually a crucial factor in regulating cell growth. Levels go up when you're a kid in order to power your development, but when you reach adulthood, IGF-1 levels diminish. It's your body's cue to stop producing more cells than it kills off. Should your levels of IGF-1 remain too high when you reach adulthood, however, your cells will constantly receive a message to grow, divide, and keep going and growing. Not surprisingly, the more IGF-1 you have in your bloodstream, the higher your risk for developing cancers, such as prostate cancer. There's a rare form of dwarfism called Laurent syndrome that is caused by the body's inability to produce IGF-1. Affected individuals grow to be only a few feet tall, but they also almost never get cancer. Laurent syndrome is a sort of cancer-proofing mutation, which led scientists to wonder, what if you could get all the IGF-1 you needed as a child to grow to a normal height, but then downregulate this hormone as adults, and thereby turn off excess growth signals? It turns out you can do just that, not with surgery or medication, but through simple dietary choices. The release of IGF-1 appears to be triggered by the consumption of animal protein. This may explain why you can so dramatically bolster the cancer-fighting power of your bloodstream within weeks of eating a plant-based diet. Remember the experiments in which dripping the blood from people eating healthy diets onto cancer cells wiped more of them out? Well, if you add back to the cancer cells the amount of IGF-1 that left the plant eater's systems, guess what happens? The diet and exercise effect disappears. The cancer cell growth comes surging back. This is how we suspect plant-based eating boosts our blood defenses. By reducing animal protein intake, we reduce our levels of IGF-1. After just 11 days of cutting back on animal protein, your IGF-1 levels drop by 20%, and your levels of IGF-1 binding protein can jump by 50%. One of the ways your body tries to protect itself from cancer, that is, excessive growth, is by releasing a binding protein into your bloodstream to tie up any excess IGF-1. Think of it as the body's emergency brake. Even if you've managed to downregulate production of new IGF-1 through diet, what about all the excess IGF-1 still circulating from the bacon and eggs you may have eaten 2 weeks before? No problem. The liver releases a snatch squad of binding proteins to take it out of circulation. How plant-focused does a diet have to be to lower IGF-1 levels? Animal protein stimulates IGF-1 production, whether it's the muscle proteins in meat, the egg white proteins in eggs, or the milk proteins in dairy. Vegetarians who include eggs and dairy in their diets don't seem to achieve a significant reduction in IGF-1. Only men and women who limit their intake of all animal proteins appear able to significantly drop their levels of this cancer-promoting hormone and raise their levels of the protective binding proteins. Prostate cancer isn't inevitable. I once gave a speech in Bellport, New York, about preventing chronic disease through diet. Afterwards, an audience member named John was inspired to email me and recount his battle with prostate cancer. Diagnosed at age 52, John had 6 needle core biopsies performed, and each showed his cancer to be very aggressive. John's doctors immediately recommended surgery to remove the entire prostate. Instead of going under the knife, John decided to switch to a plant-based diet. 8 months later, he had another biopsy. His doctors were astonished to see that only 10% of his cancer remained. What's more, his PSA tests have been completely normal ever since. John was diagnosed in 1996. After changing his diet, his cancer went away and has stayed away. John may have just gotten lucky, though. I do not recommend that people ignore their doctor's advice. Whatever you and your medical team decide together, healthy diet and lifestyle changes can presumably only help. That's the nice thing about lifestyle interventions. They can be implemented in addition to whatever other treatment options are chosen. In a research setting, that can complicate matters, as you don't know which action may have been responsible for any improvement. But when facing a cancer diagnosis, you may want to opt for all the help you can get. Regardless of whether cancer patients elect for chemo, surgery, or radiation, they can always improve their diets. A prostate-healthy diet is a breast-healthy diet, is a heart-healthy diet, is a body-healthy diet.